KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Zell's Cafe, a breakfast and brunch spot at 1300 Southeast Morrison Street, serving baked salmon Benedict, German waffles, and more. Lunch was provided by The Spicy Spoon, located at 3540 North Mississippi Avenue in the North Portland area. Open from 11 to 8 daily, serving Mexican cuisine. Dinner provided by De Nicola's. Located at 3520 Southeast Powell Boulevard, De Nicola's Authentic Italian Restaurant has been a Portland institution for over 40 years. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The KBOO Board of Directors will meet twice in September. The first meeting is Monday, September 17th at 6 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032.
We have here in our studio Babak Zulfagari. He is a community activist educating people on Measure 11, and Robert and Anthony, who have been sentenced under Measure 11. Welcome to the studio, everyone.
Thank you for having us.
Great. So could you all start out with just telling our audience what exactly Measure 11 is?
Yeah, Measure 11 are mandatory minimum sentences. It was a ballot measure that was passed by Oregonians in 1994. And the pieces of it, starts at the age of 15. So a youth are tried in adult court. And there are 21 different crimes. And 70 months is the lowest sentence for a mandatory minimum.
And does Oregon differ from other states as far as this mandatory minimum goes?
There was the three strikes laws, mm-hmm. right, in California, and there have been other mandatory minimum sentencing policies in the United States. But the piece about youth being charged as adults is pretty unique to Oregon. We have the second highest rate of juveniles transferring to the adult system in the United States, I think behind Louisiana.
What age is a juvenile transferred into an adult facility? Just if they're 15 or when they turn 18?
So with the Oregon Youth Authority, 19 is the cutoff. Mm-hmm. So if the offense occurs before your 19th birthday, then you can go into the Oregon Youth Authority custody and be in a correctional facility, which we'll talk about. And then after the age of 19, it would be adult system. But then the next layer of that is that if you're in the youth correctional facility, you're there until the age of 25, and then you transfer. So that's something that happens with Measure 11, is that these mandatory minimum sentences take young people, young adults, and when they turn 25, they then go to the adult system, even if they have 12 to 24 months left, which is something we should be looking at.
Mm-hmm. And I know you've been doing some studies or looking into how early incarceration affects the human brain. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Anthony, do you want to share a little bit about your experience and, mm-hmm. and how what the impact of Measure 11 was, considering kind of where you were in your life and what had happened to your life before you were taken into custody, and then the effect on your development?
Yeah, I kind of grew real fast on it, coming from the fact I didn't know anything about it until I was in it, and all my questions like what's going on, this and that. And just like every step I was learning something about Measure 11. Like even now I'm still learning stuff about it. But when you're in there facing a Measure 11, there's nothing you can do about it. A mandatory minimum of 70 months. It's like you suck it up and make the best time out of it. Like learn. And
if I can interject a little bit, let's say that's the best case scenario, mm-hmm. is you learn and you take advantage and you take advantage of the resources at hand. But you tell a 15-year-old kid who's, again, referring back to the brain science, I'm not a brain scientist, but I listen to a lot of smart people, and it says the brain science for a young person, their frontal lobe, which controls their impulse, and it's not fully developed until about age 25. So these kids that are 15 that are acting off impulse, yes, they have cognitive understanding, and yes, they can act as if they're functioning off a full circuit board, but yet their minds are running off impulse. They're acting as kids. And to crucify a young child at the age of 15 as an adult, granted, I heard recently that they're now offering second looks for tier 2 crimes.
Specific to Multnomah County.
Yeah, specific to Multnomah County. But a kid facing 70 months, that's a whole transition of life. That's going from adolescence to young adulthood. How do you tell a kid that? Or how does a kid prepare for that? And again, you're growing up in an environment, especially after facing these Measure 11s and these mandatory minimum sentencings, of you're dealing with other individuals who don't know properly how to communicate, hey, I need help, or I need this XYZ. Where do we go from there?
Can I add a thought to that too?
Absolutely.
I think it's really important to also consider adverse childhood experiences and traumatic, harmful development with our young people. We're talking about youth who come into contact with the system who have experienced, poverty, domestic violence, broken homes, family incarceration, abuse, their own victimization, structural racism. These are all, and more, all the kinds of experiences that they've had growing up and developing, which then is affecting how they manage emotions, how they manage anger, what their judgments are, what their value system is. And we have an opportunity with our system when someone comes into contact to see that this is the story behind the person, right? Devon or Shai, who I work with in the community, who are now incarcerated or in custody, these are the kinds of experiences they had. And they come in contact with the system, and instead of embracing them, putting a village around them and helping them heal, it's like we're harming them and forcing them to understand what they did without any validation to their story, their experience, right?
Yeah, and that's one thing about Measure 11 is there's no judiciary discretion whatsoever. Yeah, the circumstances surrounding it.
Correct, right. And in these cases too, these are serious violent offenses, right? We're not minimizing that, and there are victims, right? Mm-hmm. The people who are directly affected, they need to have a voice. The victim's voice is really left out, right? And there's a wide range of perspective, right? There are victims who would say, yeah, lock them up for a long period of time. I want to see them serve every day of their sentence. And there are others who would say, I want to see this person eventually be my neighbor or be someone else's neighbor and be rehabilitated and own what they did and understand the harm that they did, right? Mm-hmm. And so that those voices need to be elevated. And it's tough because, especially with Measure 11 and, not having victims involved in the same kind of way, that voice is left out.
Have y'all run into people who were victims of these crimes actually wanting people who are serving time to actually get some clemency whenever they're young? Have you all experienced that in your...
What I could say to that, I think the two people I've talked to specifically have said that they don't want that moment in someone's life, someone's young life, right, mm-hmm. this young person, to affect them for the rest of their life, right? The experiences while you're incarcerated for that period of time with the lack of motivation, knowing you're doing every day your sentence, and coming out with a felony on your record, right? Employment and housing are two protective factors when someone transitions out, and we're saying, sorry, friendly homes and friendly jobs is what you're looking at, right? Mm-hmm. So is that really creating, a safer environment that and is that what the victim would want, right?
I was reading a study, and they said that the Supreme Court came up with some decisions or that youth have a unique capacity to reform, are fundamentally different from and less culpable than adults. All youth should have a reasonable opportunity to demonstrate change and things like that. So this mandatory minimum sentence just kind of takes that away, doesn't it? The mm-hmm. fact that youth have the ability to change.
Yeah. No disrespect to the Supreme Court.
Oh, right.
But that it seems like common sense. That mm-hmm. is common sense.
Right.
Right.
A young child doesn't know how to communicate that I want a bottle. So what does that child do? Does it screams out, it throws a fit, it throws a tantrum, and that child is going to continue down that tantrum until you teach that child a different way, until you teach that child how to communicate. So for, again, I reiterate, for these young people that are trying to find their individuality, that are trying to find themselves, that are trying to find their voice amongst an orchestra of adults who look at them as kids, but yet as soon as you do something bad, it's, I'm not going to give you the learning lesson in it, but I'm going to punish you for it, and then I'm going to ask you to learn from it. I'm going to ask you to take on the challenge of life. I just learned recently there's 1,200 repercussions that basically that come
felony.
that fall out from
collateral consequences.
I can say for myself, I'm on numerous councils. I do a lot, and I try to do a lot to give back to my city, but even now I find the dilemma of, after serving my time, after getting off of parole, after doing all this stuff and giving back to my city, recently I'm getting denied for basic living. I make three times the amount that they're asking for rent, and yet I'm still getting blocked. Like, there's a rental company, not gonna say names, that it said within the last 50 years you can't be convicted of a crime. That's a lifetime. It's unfathomable to think about. Like, how are we to change this system? Like, that's the question that hopefully is underlying everything. This law, Measure 11, is out to get us.
That'll be a good segue to the survey later. Did you want to share a little bit?
Yeah, sometimes like we try our best to change other scenarios and other aspects, but we got to change ourselves first. I know a lot of people are familiar with that. Like, you can always progress in anything that you love, and regardless of what your past has done, I think there's many out there that will accept what you know, as long as, and if they don't, there will be somebody else. Just don't stop. Like, and that's another thing, that's another aspect that will help you while you're doing time, I should say. Progress your talents, you know what I mean? And just don't stop, and don't ever just feel like the world is gonna end ever. Just keep going, and there's always hope. Like, I don't stress, life is too short to stress, you know what I mean?
And that hopelessness at such a young age, right? Like, that's something that I've seen with some of the youth that I work with. You know, while they're in custody for this amount of time and weighing this really long sentence over their head, right, and separated from their normal environment, is like, you know, at 16, 17, thinking your life is over, becoming suicidal, not wanting to live anymore. It's a kid, right? And there's other ways that we could be doing this to really focus on community safety, right? To focus on deterrence, right, which we'll talk about later probably, and also to elevate the voices of victims. And I think that with a system that looks more like restorative justice, right, bringing the village of people together and really lifting up this young person who's crying for help, right? Like, this is a cry for help when someone's involved in a robbery or an assault or something even more serious, right? And that's that range of Measure 11 offenses. What happened, right? What has happened? And what can we do to heal that person and heal the community, right?
I believe there's a study actually out that shows, sir, after a certain amount of time, when coming into this system, the recidivism rate's kind of high. And the study shows that after a certain amount of time, it lowers. Then it shows that it plateaus. And then it goes on to show the more time that's sitting there under that plateau kind of window, the recidivism rate actually increases again. So that should raise alarm in itself. Okay, you came, you sat down, you're doing your time, you're learning, you're hopefully taking advantage. Granted, it's not a perfect story for everyone. Granted, there are people that go in the system and continue to stay in the system because that's all they know. I've known young people that don't know or can't accept good or positive affirmation. So they revert back to the negative because that's all they have ever received, and that is their comfort zone. That seems backwards. It seems, again, with the restorative approach, I'm definitely an advocate for restorative justice. But how do we address this? How do we take this skewed view that these young individuals have and tell them that it is okay to fail as long as you can succeed from it, as long as you see the lesson in it and learn from that and move past that? A failure doesn't define you. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Michael Jordan got cut from his freshman basketball team, but he still goes down in history as the greatest. Yes, I said that with LeBron. He's the greatest.
The GOAT.
But it's just the thought. How do we change this from thought into a theory? How do we change this theory into law? How do we put this into action?
Right, pretty much, let's give the foundation it needs is what he's exactly. Like, what are we going to do to change the foundation that the youth has?
So what does restorative justice look like and today, right, without the Measure 11? Are there programs and...
Shout outs to Northwest Resolutions.
Resolutions Northwest.
Northwest
Resolutions. And Rhea.
Resolution. Yeah. All right.
Big time advocate there and worker.
I went through a training that they had for restorative justice training. One of my good friends works for them and does restorative justice circles. And I've honestly myself participated in a circle before. And it's a healing process.
What's a circle?
So for me, granted, they all look different across wherever your culture it at. For me, the circle that I was involved in, it was me, the victim, a mediator. In this party, it was a third party that was there and was present. It was four of us in this scenario. And I sat back and I listened to this person, and they gave window for me to listen to this person, and this person told me how I affected them and how what I did messed with them, and how the fallout from that has messed with them. And after allowing that window for that grudge, or allowing for that weight to be released, granted, I didn't want to hear it. It took a lot for me to sit down and accept the my business. Like, it took a lot for me to accept my flaws and accept the perception of someone else. And my mindset around it was, okay, for me to grow, I have to experience what they are experiencing and put myself in their place. And then I said my piece. And after that, we came up with a resolution and it got solved there.
Collaboratively,
right? Yeah. But again, these circles, and I don't want to speak on it as if I'm expert on it, because I don't want to discredit it in any way or not give it the credit due, but it's definitely a village approach. It's allowing your peace to be known. It's allowing your truth to be known. Granted, we all have our own truths. Granted, we all have our own understandings, but it's creating that realm where we can sit down and we can put it all out on the table, and we look at it and we get rid of what we don't need and we take from it.
Well said.
Right.
We have to take a quick break for our pledge week.
Got it.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Grace Ann. This is a compelling content that we're listening to here on KBOO. This is live in the studio, and we're asking for your support for News and Public Affairs Day. We are within $200 of our match, so when you call right now, your money will be doubled, and that's almost completed. We had $1,500 and we're down to $200, so please call. Get that last $200 doubled. Support community radio. 877-500-5266. This station is about real free speech, not the pretense of free speech that other stations pretend to be about. No, we have people talking from the heart, from their experience, people who have been at the front lines of struggles, people who have been incarcerated and know the real reality of that. And we're asking you to, whether you agree with everything you hear on KBOO, but you appreciate the fact that there is a space on the airwaves to talk about these issues freely. Support this radio station, divest from the prison industrial complex, and invest in community right now, and double your contribution, like Linda did, a new member who called in. The number to join Linda and so many others and be a part of this community effort is 877-500-5266. Again, 877-500-KBOO.
And Cenk, I think this is an important discussion to share with the listeners. You know, we've had the discussions around the U.S.'s overwhelming prison population a number of times this week. If the numbers are kind of still fresh in my mind, I think we currently have about 20% of the world's prisoners and about 5% of the world's population. We have almost 3 million people behind bars and another 4.5 million people out on parole. This is obscene. And to think that we're doing this with mandatory sentencing for minors and that we are nearly as bad as Louisiana is just horrifying to me. So I thank Grace Ann for bringing these young men together to share this story. I think it's important, and I think it's a good example of why it's important for KBOO listeners to continue to support their community radio station by calling 877-500-5266 or going online to kboo.fm. These dialogues during the news and public affair day don't happen anywhere else but KBOO. The job here is to make sure that we're informing our members and our listeners of the details and the perhaps overlooked discussions that will affect the future for so many young people. This is a tragedy when you think about young men being locked away and then transferred to adults under mandatory sentence, transferred to adult prisons under mandatory sentence. This has got to be changed. This law has been in place for, I guess, over 20 years now. This is something that has to be looked at. It has to be changed, along with all the other obscene mandatory sentencing laws that exist in this country. You can help us keep this message in front of our listeners, in front of the community, by helping to fund KBOO. Give us a call at 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm and help us to keep the voice of KBOO alive in the city. As Cenk mentioned, we have a matching. We're only a couple hundred dollars to go to get our matching of $1,500, which means that when we get $1,500 worth of listener support, we have a benefactor who will come through and match that. This is critically important for your community station to keep on the air, keep in your ear, and keep these important stories out in front of you.
So call right now, 877-500-5266. Your membership empowers people in your community to offer you news, information, and new perspectives that make you think, that really are outside of the box. We explore radical approaches to problem solving and making the world a better place here at KBOO. Your membership helps make this programming possible. This station is almost fully listener supported. That means that we don't have some big corporate sponsor that puts advertising on the airwaves, forcing you to have to listen to advertising about some product that you really don't need. KBOO is actually supported by the listeners, and that allows us to remain independent because we don't have that corporate entity pushing an editorial message and editorial control over our content. It's so important. Massive media conglomerates have changed the way that media operates, destroying net neutrality. KBOO is here. We are on the web. We are on the air. They can't keep us down. We need your support to stay strong. It's gotten harder and harder to access small sites, small entities like KBOO, and that's why it's more important than ever to support this station that brings you the voices outside of the corporate-run agenda. Here at KBOO, we're independent. We remain so because we have listener support. We need you to support right now, News and Public Affairs Day. There's never been a more more important time to support KBOO. If you're tuning in thinking you were going to hear the oldies show, the Roots of Rock and Roll, that will be back next week. Right now, we're having a special program of news and public affairs in order to ensure that these voices are heard and that our listeners are able to support the station in a big way. Maybe you could do a $1,500 contribution. Maybe you've benefited from the system and want to divest and give back to the community. Or maybe you're someone who could do a basic $20 membership. All of the members count equally here at KBOO. So support right now, 877-500-5266. We're going to go back to Grace Ann. Keep those phones ringing, 877-500-KBOO.
All right, we are speaking with Babak, Robert, and Anthony about Measure 11 reform, and we were just talking about restorative justice. I was wondering if y'all could give me and the audience a more clear idea of what that is and what that entails.
Yeah, it's essentially bringing the people who are affected by or involved in a crime, the victim, the offender, community members, just the community in large, to come together and make a decision on what resolution would look like, how to repair harm, right? It's really a value system that's associated with how to address wrongdoing, right? And I said crime earlier, but just wrongdoing in general, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, if you think about, like, in school, there's a conflict between students, right? Don't call the cops and have the cops come deal with that situation, or the school resource officers, right? Is this something that can be dealt with between the students and maybe a trusted staff member that can help mediate? It's like a mediation, right? Mediate this. Let's understand the harm that you did to someone and therefore build compassion, right? Build empathy. You know, you've got, you know, an incident where someone burglarizes a store, right? And so for the person who burglarized to be able to see, like, how they affected the business and the people who work there and the families that are connected with the people who work there, understanding harm. See, if we did this early on in school, and I know, like, Rosemary Anderson High School, for example, and other schools in Portland, they actually have restorative justice circles and meetings and try to resolve problems as a community, right? And if, you know, in elementary schools, if our young boys and girls are learning the harm that they're doing with their actions, you're building compassion in people and empathy, and that value can really drive decisions down the road, right?
Mm-hmm. Are there other places besides the justice system and, well, you said the high schools that do restorative justice?
I mean, schools, mm-hmm. our system. I mean, it's a growing practice, right? It's a practice. It's a value system. And I know if people want to learn more about mm-hmm. Restorative justice, we mentioned REA and Resolutions Northwest earlier, and there's actually an event September 25th, so in 2 weeks? Yeah, mm-hmm. 2 weeks, September 25th at the Juvenile Justice Complex. It's a conversation on restorative justice standards in Oregon, exploring hopes, concerns, and implications. So maybe search for that online and RSVP. It might be hard to communicate it over the radio, but mm-hmm. there's a lot of dialogue around restorative justice right now.
And that would also be considered a bit of a deterrent. Do you want to talk more about deterrence?
Well, and even more, yeah, it's prevention, mm-hmm. right? Let's prevent crime. Let's prevent wrongdoing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's teach. Let's explore these teaching moments. So about 2 years ago, a Measure 11 Pathway to Prevention workshop was started. Former mentor with the CHI program, Randall Wyatt, who's a student advocate for PYB, went up at a community listening or a listening session at PCC and said, look, like, why are we not in schools educating our youth about Measure 11, right? And, you know, you're thinking, like, what, this doesn't happen already? Like, you know, you should know about this, right? So we've gone in and we've reached 7 different schools. We've had 17 different workshops. 500 students have been reached, and we've learned, you know, with our goals of education, prevention, and empowerment, that 87% of students don't know what Measure 11 is. 87%. Mm-hmm. Now you take that and add brain science on top of it, and look at, you know, impulse control, anger management, judgment, and how the brain's working at that age, and the experiences of a lot of these youth who come in contact with this system. Measure 11 does not deter people from committing these crimes, right? If I go to throw a punch, I'm thinking at 15, oh wait, I could be looking at 70 months, right? Or if I go with these guys and go do this, I'm looking at 90 months for this robbery one, right? That's not processed in the mind, right, at this age.
And well, I'm imagining people would be trying to plea out of things, and whenever they find out that they'll have this huge sentence on top of them, does that kind of, I suppose, make it so that people can just get sort of thrown through the courts and then right into jail for by pleading out? How does that affect people?
The average nationally is 95% of cases are plea bargain, mm-hmm. and actually with Measure 11, it's higher than that. Your starting point, and this is, you know, we talked about this a little bit with, you know, being in custody and detention as a young boy or girl, and you're facing these charges. The starting point for the negotiation for the plea bargain is 70 months for the lowest level offense for Measure 11, right? The robbery two, the assault two. Robbery two could be as simple as I go into a store and act like I have a gun and I steal and I leave, right? Assault, you know, in these cases, like two people could go up to another person and threaten them and take their phone, and you're talking robbery two, right? That layer of it, and like the aiding and abetting, like you could not even know what's going on and people around you are getting involved with this and you're kind of lumped in together, right? This is something that happens, especially in these situations where people are stealing, high school, stealing, drugs, fighting. These sorts of things are not uncommon, unfortunately, right? But that's the reality. And, you know, to have a mandatory minimum sentence and to address that, just, you know, it's not effective.
Yeah, especially whenever pushing boundaries is almost a huge part of development.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the wrong spot.
Right.
What about community safety? How do these programs affect that?
Yeah. Do you want to say anything about that, Anthony? Okay. So, you know, we talked about this a little bit earlier, mm-hmm. about, you know, the stories of people who come in contact with the system and then being locked up for long periods of time. You've got institutionalization, mm-hmm. you've got the barriers with the felony. How is that really helping with, you know, employment and housing opportunities once someone reenters? So, you know, to be able to really focus on values and having treatment and quality services while someone's in custody, for a shorter period of time, not, you know, 5 years, 10 months, but, you know, every year and a half, you know, probably get to this after the break, is, you know, every year and a half, someone who's in custody should be having a second look or a quarterly look, right, to see where they're at, see if they're ready to transition.
Mm-hmm. And sorry, we do have to go to another pitch break.
And here we are here at KBOO, the station that brings you these vital conversations, like what is, you know, the impact of Measure 11, of the mandatory minimum sentencing. You are hearing that right now. It is a live interview that Grace Ann Smith has put together, a news volunteer here at KBOO. We do this work because we know you, our community members, need to be informed. You demand this information. You demand independent, in-your-face journalism. You demand Resistance Radio. And right now, we are asking you to step forward and become a part of KBOO Community Radio today with your membership. Your call of support is so important at 877-500-5266. I want to thank Linda. Linda in Northeast Portland, thank you so much. She called in and became a brand new member of KBOO, and that's very exciting as the KBOO family expands ever more. Thank you, Linda, for participating at your community radio station. Linda called 877-500-5266.
You know, and Ani, I think it's, first of all, I want to thank Grace Ann for bringing Babak, Robert, and Anthony in. I think this is really quite an interesting and illuminating conversation. You know, I still struggle with the idea that a 15-year-old could suffer a mandatory 70-month sentence for robbery, too. It somehow seems barbaric in this day and age. In fact, it doesn't seem. It is barbaric in this day and age. We need to fight this, and we need to continue to voice our concern and drive to have a change to this and other extremely punitive justice rules as opposed to restorative justice rules that they've been discussing. And we'll continue to push that message with your help. Please, you need to help us get that word out. Keep speaking truth to power. And we do that. We've been doing that at KBOO for 50 years. We want to do it for 50 more. but we can only do it with your help and to know that you're behind us. So call us at 877-500-5266. Again, I'm going to go slower this time, 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm and click the donate button, or your smartphone KBOO app, and you can get to us that way. But whichever way you choose, take the opportunity now, support this important discussion and all the other important discussions we've had today. Think about some of the things you've learned during today's News and Public Affairs Day. We talked to Occupy ICE PDX folks. We spoke to Direct Action Alliance. We listened to Van Jones' speech at PSU from 2 days ago, and now we have this important Measure 11 panel discussion going on. This can't happen without your support. Call 877-500-5266 and show that this is important community communication to you.
Absolutely. I also want to thank Adrian for renewing her membership. Thank you so much, Adrian. And John becoming a brand new member again, another new member. Thank you so much, John. This is super important radio. Please do be here with us. You've already joined with your ears and with your mind and with your heart. And now it's time to support financially this community organization that supports so many communities throughout the year. So please do call right now with your support, 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm. However you can do it, just do it right now. It takes a couple moments of your time. You know it's important. That's why you're listening. You know KBOO's broadcasts are important. They bring you information that you rely on so that we can take right action and change the world. We can make it a better place, and we do it together. Each one of us doesn't have that kind of power, but collectively our power is tremendous. And it is time to exercise a little of that collective power right now by strengthening KBOO, your community resource, your community connection. Please do become a member of KBOO today. Maybe it's a brand new membership. Maybe you're renewing a long-standing commitment. Maybe you're able to give an additional one-time gift in addition to what you do monthly to support your community radio station, KBOO. Please call us right now and let us know that you're there and that you give a damn and that you are a member of KBOO Community Radio. Again, that number is 877-500-5266.
All right, and we're back. So you were saying that 87% of youth didn't know about Measure 11. What's the public's perception on this, the rest of the public?
Yeah, so one of the goals that we had with the Measure 11 Pathway to Prevention Workshop was to empower youth to get involved in their community, to get civically engaged. And so what we did was we had some young leaders through Strive last summer that developed a community awareness campaign. So we went out into the community, and we were able to educate the public, talk about Measure 11, and help them be well-informed, right, so they could communicate their vision of justice with the knowledge that they had. And the conversation grew, continued growing through the year. We reached about 2,262 people across 29 counties over the past year and shared results with legislators to help influence legislation going forward for 2019. Then we went back to the workshops during the year. Robert's involved with that. We're going to have Anthony and Kenny, another young man who just recently transitioned back to the community after doing a Measure 11 sentence, come be involved with our workshops. But we actually had some youth outreach leadership interns, Yoli. So we again got the youth involved. We had young men in the CHI program come in to the schools with us and actually help educate their peers about Measure 11. This summer, we then wanted to continue the community awareness survey, but we actually wanted to get more specific. The questions were general and kind of broad with the first survey, so we created the legislative bill support survey that has very specific questions about Measure 11 and specific elements of it that maybe people would want to change. So we learned that actually a majority of people don't know what Measure 11 is, right? Not just the youth at 87%, mm-hmm. But adults, right? People who are paying the $100,000 a year to incarcerate a young man for a year. Most people don't know about it. So I think it's been great to see the results, and it's an ongoing survey, www.surveymonkey.com /r/measure11survey. It's anonymous, takes 3 minutes. You can see the results and you can share it. And please do, social media and text. So, you know, we're hoping to share those results. And the key is, again, the public is not very educated about Measure 11. You know, these youth that came out and spoke to community members, people were in tears, right? Mm-hmm. Thinking like this could happen to someone I know, or my grandkids, or my son, or my daughter, or my niece, right? And it's something that with this knowledge, I think it's going to really help shape the future, especially as it relates to youth justice.
And I was asking earlier about what point is it decided that a crime is going to be viewed as a Measure 11 crime? And at that point, does it disproportionately reflect people of color whenever they go to
the
system?
Say the severity, mm-hmm. I would say. That's usually what they look at, mm-hmm. Against another person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel our whole judicial system has a major disproportion of young colored men, in particular, that are being locked up at alarming rates. I can speak from my own personal experience of my first time, my first offense. I'd never been in trouble, and I, in all sense, had the book thrown at me. Granted, I committed the crime. I was there. Granted, I was guilty. But the time that came after that and the repercussions that fall after that, for a lot of young black men that are getting out, not only do you face stereotypes, not only do you face all these sort of stigmatisms and you already feel marginalized in a lot of ways, but you come home and you face more restrictions. And it's like, you got in trouble. We're giving you the consequence of it. But it's not, you're not getting just sentenced to 70 months. You are getting sentenced to life, mm-hmm. because the effects are past your retribution. The effects are past you giving a portion of your time.
You said earlier about trying to sign a lease and it asked if you had committed a crime in the last 50 years.
I'm only 26. I haven't even lived that many years, you know. It's, so to even think about that, none of us are perfect,
right? Mm-hmm.
Most of the guards and GLCs, group life coordinators, for these youth facilities, live lives and they speak of their own testament when they connect with these young individuals. Hey, I've been down that road. I got in trouble when I was younger smoking pot, or I did such and such and I didn't get caught for it. And now look at it. They found their way into corrections. And I see the irony in it of using the word corrections, because what's exactly being corrected?
Mm-hmm. So if somebody did get charged with a minimum, with a Measure 11 at the age of 15, they wouldn't be able to sign a lease at certain companies until they were 65 years old.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah,
I don't know what they're gonna do in the meantime. I guess couch surf and live on mom's couch or in basement. But I kind of make humor of it. But it's serious and it holds a lot of gravity. That's simple. Employment. When I first got out, I got once at the company. I got hired by the store. The company fired me. The store fought for me to get back on, and then the company fired me again because of my record.
Oh wow!
And it toiled with my emotion. And honestly, these individuals that are trying to live productive lives, they gave their time, they gave a part of them, and they took a part from someone, and they're trying to give that back. Now, once they get out, they're not only facing these barriers, but after a while, one of my brothers said it best. He said, after a while of hearing no, of hearing no, of hearing no, hitting this door, hitting this door, hitting this door, and all I know is to go out and get it the way I was raised or the way I was taught. Again, that goes back to the cycle. That goes to the generational cycle. Hey, this is what my dad did. This is what my dad's dad did, because they weren't taught any better. So I'm going to follow cycle and I'm going to follow suit. But once I get out of that mode and I try to do something already uneasy, already feels unfamiliar to me, but now you're telling me, no, it's not okay. No, 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 no. And what do you tell this young individual who's just released back into society, who has a young child to fend for, or who needs a head over or a place over their head? You can't live productively. Go out and get a job. Everybody doesn't want to work at fast food. You know what I mean? Some people have higher ambitions, and it's really, really sad. It's really, really sad because it's bigger than just a correctional facility. It's bigger than just Measure 11. It's honestly a sickening mindset in the way our society lives, and it's sad for the simple fact we are. Our country holds the highest incarceration. Like, we live in a prisoned country.
Well, you were saying earlier that 25% of the incarcerated population lives in the United States.
So if you watch the 13th documentary on Netflix, it's the introduction is this specific statistic, and then it gets even further into the overrepresentation of people of color in this system. I want to say it's 1 in 32. I'm not going to even attempt to stack. Just go watch the 13th documentary. And if you haven't seen it and you want to get a... it's heartbreaking, but at the same time, extremely educational. Watch that documentary on Netflix.
I know a stat offhand, and quote me on it. One out of every three black men will be locked up in their lifetime.
There it is, yeah.
Like... That's crazy to say. And I want to say it's one out of 33 for every Caucasian.
Culture.
It's a divide. And honestly, until we actually analyze this system that we have in place, and until we actually analyze in going deeper to the systematic cycle, we're living in a sick mind. We're living with a sick mind. How are we going to do the same thing and expect a different outcome?
That's the definition of insanity. You're right. I like to say, don't get caught in the wave. What are you going to do to gain and get power from it? There's always a way out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to, this is completely personal. And I would just like to say, it's like, I don't want to sit and just keep pointing the finger. What can I do to gain a mindset? What can I do to gain power? What can I do to grow from this situation?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of sitting and pointing the finger, that's a huge philosophy that I like to do. I'll take accountability for a lot of things, and pretty much
that's a powerful value set. Yeah. Really, to look at yourself despite every layer of barriers that could have been in your way. Like, what could I be doing to learn and grow,
right?
And be above what happened, right? You brought up, 13th just came up, right? And I don't want to get too deep onto this. This will be a little bit off track from Measure 11, but it's related.
Mm-hmm.
The two prison booms we've had in the United States, first one came after the 13th Amendment, right? When slavery was abolished, right? Except as a form of punishment for crime, right? We had our first prison boom right after that, right? Second prison boom came... when? After the Civil Rights Movement, right? We've got Nixon, tough on crime, Reagan, war on drugs, right? Which continued to evolve Republican after Republican until President Clinton came in the early 90s, 1994, and ran on the toughest policies.
The super predator.
Super predator, right? Federal crime bill, militarizing the police, right? And that's when three strikes laws passed, 1994. That's when Measure 11 passed, 1994. So this is what one of the things we talk about in our workshops is kind of like, what's the context behind policy change? I think that's really important because now, as we've gotten more and more research, more and more information and evidence about how our system affects outcomes, we're getting closer to being more evidence-based. We're getting closer to really focusing on restorative justice and other ways to have better outcomes for our society.
Well, that's interesting for the historical context. I was looking into the 1994, and I was thinking, what was going on at that point? So also, it's interesting for people that think that history is so far away from us sometimes, right. But it's just sort of taking on a different appearance.
It's in our rear view mirror. It's right there.
Yeah. It's a great segue also into the kind of education that you've been doing for Measure 11 for people that might think that history is something that's so far away. What can people do about this? Is there anything coming up in the future about any ballot measures, or if that's the correct word?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so one of the things that we're doing now, you know, from the community level is the survey, right? The legislative bill support survey. So in terms of just getting educated, getting well-informed, and then communicating what your values of the system would be, I think is one way that you can directly get involved. And then if you're sharing that with people, now you're really expanding who it's reaching, right? You know, district attorneys are the ones charging crimes, right? They get the police report, they look at the facts of the case, and then they charge, right? So charging practices are an element, and district attorneys are elected, right? They're elected officials. So I know Rod Underhill, Multnomah County District Attorney, and the district attorney's office is starting to make some progress in terms of looking at tier two offenses and what can we be doing differently. So it's a start, and I think it needs to expand to other counties in the state. But you know, reach out to your district attorney. They're elected. Yeah. You know, the legislator. You know, a new bill or new bills can go into 2019 legislation that focus on modifications to Measure 11 or repeal. And they're elected as well, right? The senators, the House representatives, and they're listening. I think they're really listening to the community right now, and what they want to see going forward.
And you said tier two. I'm actually not quite sure what that means as far as violent crime goes. And could you describe that for us? Or?
Yeah, it's second degree. Tier
second
two
degree?
Is like second degree robbery and second degree assault. Those are the two specific offenses. And they make up, those two offenses make up 30% of all the convictions for Measure 11.
And second degree robbery could just be?
Going into a store, acting like you have a gun, and stealing.
Wow.
Mostly robbery with a weapon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you don't even have to have it.
Right.
You can say you have something and not have it. Which, that fear that someone feels in that moment is very real.
Mm-hmm.
But 70 months of someone's life.
Yeah.
You know, it's unbalanced.
It happened when I was 17 years old, and it's going to stay with me till I'm 40. If this comes back up, you're going to judge me off of that.
Or 65 if you're trying to rent a place.
Yeah.
So we only have about 4 minutes left. I just want to make sure, like, is there anything else you all would like to add that we haven't gotten to? I'd like to give you all the biggest platform possible.
I think we scratched the surface. There's a lot to cover.
There is a lot to cover.
It's Measure 11 is part of the problem.
It's a symptom of the problem.
Symptom of the problem. There's a lot more going on. There's a lot more that needs to be looked at, revised, changed. Again, the mindset in the time of 94 is not the same in 2018. And if it is, that's saying something in itself. But it's not. And there's a lot of things that are going on.
Yeah, so that was a great segue.
Mm-hmm.
The minimum Measure 11 modifications that are being recommended, you know, with based on brain science, based on the fact that our correctional facilities do have youth in custody until the age of 25, and the results of the survey really show, and I'll be quick with this, there's age as one of the most important elements of this, right? 15-year-olds should not be charged as adults. Youth should not be charged as adults. But even more so, you know, with brain development, going through the age of 25 and the structure of our correctional facility, the age should be changed. If we're not going to repeal Measure 11, then 25 should be the age that we start enforcing mandatory minimum sentences. That's one piece. 65% support that in the survey. Second looks, or what I call quarterly looks, every 25% of someone's sentence, we should be getting everyone together, including the victim, right, and having input from the whole team to say, you know, has this person rehabilitated? Have they taken accountability? Are they ready to transition safely to the community? 73% support that from the survey. And that speaks to brain science and the people's ability and young people's capacity for change, right? The sentence lengths, 70 months is the minimum right now. We should have a significant reduction in the starting point for a minimum sentence, perhaps a 50% reduction.
5 years, 10 months.
Felonies should not be following.
Felonies should not be following,
right, after they're reentering society. Mm-hmm. So that should be a juvenile expungible record. Robbery to assault, 76% support those not being Measure 11 offenses. So the list of 21, looking at which crimes are on there, and robbery to an assault, too, a lot of people support that being changed. And then it being retroactive, last piece. There are 4,000 Measure 11 convictions in the state right now. There's 6,000 convictions with a prison population of 14,000. So 40% of our prison population are Measure 11 offenders. Many of them took deals, so they're not even in that stat. But I think looking at our young people who are incarcerated now, the young girls in the correctional facility that I see, and the young boys and men, both in the correctional facilities and in custody, we should be taking a look at the fact that they went through this whole process and what we can do differently.
Another thing, since we look back to that foundation we were talking about in restorative justice, what's the lowest that you can go into OYA? I think it's 12 years old, right? Mm-hmm. Some of these kids aren't even committing crimes, and you're throwing them into a system where they're going to develop, back to what bro was talking about, develop a mindset into a criminal. And that's just setting the whole cycle up. What do? They start committing crimes, and then what, they get thrown back into the system. Then you send them to programs where they're liable to run away, and then they go back, and it's just this a cycle that just, yeah, it's just repetition, and then what, somebody up I hire just making more money off the kids. So what are you guys really doing to really improve their lifestyle? Because I think it's just a vicious cycle. And then, on top of that, the Measure 11 situation that we've always talked about.
Definitely.
Right, well, we've ran out of time, but thank you all so much for coming in. This has been a pleasure. Great.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate you having us.
Anna, check out the survey. Can you give us a couple of Googleable terms, since people might be driving?
I don't know if you can Google it, but it's just surveymonkey.com/r/Measure 11 survey.
Right. Thanks, guys.
Right, thank you.
Thank you.
And you've just heard this discussion that was organized, and the interviewer was Grace Ann Smith, one of KABU's news producers and news volunteers. And that was such an important discussion. Measure 11 is such an unjust, inhumane, and cruel piece of legislation that has been affecting us for 28 years. It was voted in 1994. I remember this because as a talk show host, I started my talk radio show early that year, and this was one of the first issues that we were yelling about on the radio. How could you charge juveniles as adults, right? We know we don't have, juveniles don't have the right to vote at 18, right? We know you have to be 16 to get a driver's license, because we know that juveniles' brains aren't fully formed yet, and that we may not exercise the best judgment as juveniles, right? But no, Measure 11 comes along, a lot of crime hysteria comes along, and this is disproportionately impacting Black and brown communities and is part of the school-to-prison pipeline. This is anathema to a democratic, free society. And this is the kind of important programs that you are listening to here on KABU, your community connection. We're asking you to connect back in with us this afternoon and call 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266. Or online at kboo.fm. It takes a moment of your time. I want to ask you to give $10 a month. $10 a month. If you got $10 in your bank account right now, Take a leap of faith and go ahead and pledge to your community radio $10 each and every month and get the Fighting Fascism Power Pack, which we have in a USB flash drive. It has Internet Security Toolkit, and it has a lot of amazing programs, podcasts that have programs and podcasts that have been put on that for your information. You can share it around in the community and spread this information more and more. But give to your community radio station, KBOO, right now. The time is now to do it. Step forward and become a member at 877-500-5266. Ray, you have something to add.
Ani, I find it particularly disturbing that these, you know, really, they're children.
Yeah.
They're put in prison. They pay their debt, and yet they're trapped by a society that refuses to forgive them.
Yeah.
After they've paid their debt. It's the saddest story, and I'm so grateful that Grace Ann got these folks together, and I'm so grateful that they were willing to share what has to be a very painful and very present issue in their lives. And, you know, I go back to our members and our listeners. You're not going to hear these kinds of stories that really tug at your heart anywhere else. This is important public affairs programming. This is deep news. You need to know this. And as we come up to the next legislative session, this is the kind of thing that you should be communicating locally to your elected representatives and make this a priority. We should all work on this to get this change. And we'll continue to promote that message and keep your voice in the ear of the public. With your support, call us at 877-500-5266. Again, that number is 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm and click on that donate button. But whichever way you choose to do it, take that opportunity and do it now. It's important.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Zell's Cafe, a breakfast and brunch spot at 1300 Southeast Morrison Street, serving baked salmon Benedict, German waffles, and more. Lunch was provided by The Spicy Spoon, located at 3540 North Mississippi Avenue in the North Portland area. Open from 11 to 8 daily, serving Mexican cuisine. Dinner provided by De Nicola's, located at 3520 Southeast Powell Boulevard. De Nicola's Authentic Italian Restaurant has been a Portland institution for over 40 years. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO is looking for someone to help support our end-of-year fundraising and communication efforts from October through December as the Interim Development Director. The Development Director will ensure we meet our annual revenue goals and will generate promotional and press materials and maintain press relationships for KBOO. This position requires extensive work with volunteers. The ideal candidate has at least 4 years of proven development experience in the nonprofit sector and strong annual report, newsletter, and grant writing skills. To apply, send a cover letter and resume to Delphine Crescenzo at del@kboo.org, or drop off and mail the cover letter and resume to 20.